Welcome to Think Big with Dan and Qasim. Join host Dan Melnick and Qasim Masood as they explore big ideas, limitless possibilities, and engage with visionaries, entrepreneurs, and thought leaders who dare to dream big. Get inspired, motivated, and find practical tips for personal growth. Think big, dream bigger, and ignite your potential.
All right, welcome to Think Big with Dan and Qasim. And if you want to go ahead and introduce yourself, tell us where you live and what you do for a living.
Yes, my name is Jesse Houghton, or Dr. Jesse Houghton. I'm a gastroenterologist, which is a physician who specializes in the digestive system. So we treat disorders of the esophagus, stomach, small intestine, colon, liver, and pancreas. I currently am living in Southern Ohio. I work at a hospital that is in Portsmouth, Ohio. It's called Southern Ohio Medical Center. And excited to be here. Hopefully I can answer some questions for you.
Awesome. Yeah. Thanks for joining us. So if you can just share with us how you decided to get into this industry in the first place.
Yeah, well, that's a common question I get. One is, what made you decide to become a doctor? And then when I get more often than that, even is, why did you go into the field of gastroenterology? Because most people, when they hear gastroenterology or when I tell them that I do endoscopies and colonoscopies, they, you know, that's kind of the only thing that sticks in their head is the colonoscopy. Why would you want to do that? So, but, going to the beginning, as far as being a doctor, I always liked the sciences and I was always interested in that area. I kind of knew I, you know, wasn't that big into business or even, you know, mathematics necessarily. But so I always liked the health field, science, anatomy, physiology. And then when I was in college, so I grew up in, even though I live in Southern Ohio now, I've been here for about 11 years. I grew up in New Jersey, near the Jersey Shore. That was well before that Jersey Shore was even a show,
right.
Even an idea. But when I was in college, I went to Rutgers, the college, and I was deciding between, I knew I wanted to do something in the health fields, whether it was physical therapy or a chiropractor or med school. And we had a health professions guidance counselor, health advisor, and we had a long discussion, and I told him my thoughts and my plans and what I was looking for, and he convinced me to go into the field of medicine. So it just goes to show that advisors, counselors, and teachers are, I mean, they shape your whole life, basically. He was great. His name was Jenkins, Dr. Jenkins. He convinced me to go into medicine. And so at that point, I had to take all the prerequisite courses for medicine. So I had to really buckle down. I say that my first year in college was a learning experience. So thank goodness I took mostly prerequisite courses for just, a liberal arts major. And then I decided to do a double major in, I started out with psychology. And then when I wanted to go into medical school, I also had a major in biological sciences. So there's several summers where I spent the whole summer. One was physics 1 and 2. One was organic chemistry 1 and 2. So there was a lot of sacrifice that went into it. And of course, anyone who goes into medical school has to take, you may have heard of the MCATs. It's the admission testing for medical school. And it's really important, your grades on the MCATs, almost as important as your grades during college. And so I took a course for that. There's several courses that you pay for, and you, you pay a good amount of money to try to get a good score on it. So I did well enough to get accepted to, several medical schools. I actually stayed in New Jersey, and it's all now under the Rutgers umbrella. At the time, it was something called University of Medicine and Dentistry of New Jersey. They had medical schools and dental schools and all types of allied health schools. And so then it was between when you go into medical school, you decide on, a specialty or a field that you want to go into. But, usually you want to know your third, or it's 4 years medical school. Usually you want to know third year, ideally, but if not fourth year. And so it was between surgery, the surgical fields, and internal medicine, which is the name that they give for, your general doctor, almost like a family practice doctor, but you're in the hospitals usually. And so I was doing research incidentally, for your viewers, almost every doctor that wants to go into a certain field, especially these days, has to do research in that field before they get accepted into those specialty training centers. So I was doing research in the department, the chairman of the Department of Surgery's lab, and then also in one of the internal medicine labs. And I never forget one of the surgical residents, so that's someone who's already going into surgery and training. It was a woman, and she said, I was talking about what I wanted to do. I couldn't decide between one of the internal medicine fields and surgery. And she told me, unless you love surgery and hate everything else, then don't go into surgery because it's so demanding and time consuming. And I didn't hate everything else. In fact, I liked several different fields. So that kind of made my decision as far as not going into surgery. So then it's internal medicine. And then all of your doctors, cardiologists, pulmonologists, nephrologists, kidney doctors, gastroenterologists, they all do they have to do an internal medicine residency. And so I knew I wanted to do something, one of those specialties. And so after I decided against surgery and for internal medicine, then it was a question of, well, which specialty do I want to go into? And so it was between cardiology and gastroenterology. And again, here I am, doing research in both of the labs. It really came down to a lifestyle, cardiologist, a little bit more having to come in the middle of the night for anyone who's having an MI, a heart attack. So it was sort of lifestyle. And they both do really well financially, both of those fields, pretty much equally competitive at that time. I graduated med school in 2002, and they're both fairly equally competitive now, the cardiology and gastroenterology fellowships, right, which is what we call specialty training. And I just kind of hit it off with the gastroenterology attendings. That's the name of a doctor that teaches residents and students. I really got along with them and the fellows that were in training at the time. And so I decided to go all in on gastroenterology and was able to get a fellowship. So to get where I am today, I had to do, I did actually 5 years of college with a double major. I had to do 4 years of medical school, then 3 years of residency, internal medicine residency, and then another 3 years of fellowship in gastroenterology, which is specialty training in gastroenterology.
Makes
so,
sense.
I'm coming out, I'm 28 before I'm even, practicing any kind of medicine. But, it's nice because when you're in residency and fellowship, you are getting a salary and there's really right. not any classroom time. And you're really treating patients at that time. Yeah. And then, just moving along as far. I joined a practice in New Jersey when I came out of fellowship. It was a multi-specialty practice. So we had cardiologists, pulmonologists, gastroenterologists, internal medicine. I was there for about 4 years, and then I don't know if a lot of your viewers are aware, but when you're a physician, you would think that you make the most money and are most successful when you're in like a city, the most populated area of the country, West Coast, East Coast. But in fact, it's usually the opposite that is true. So one of the toughest places to practice medicine, let's just take for several reasons. One, let's say salary, is the Northeast. And so I kind of found myself working harder and harder just to keep the same salary. And so I started looking around the country. I mean, as a physician, especially nowadays, you can pretty much go anywhere. Everyone's looking for doctors. Every hospital system pretty much short on doctors. And so I came across, there was a Forbes 100 best places to work. And Southern Ohio Medical Center was like the highest hospital on the list. And I thought it was interesting. I never heard of this hospital. How is it on the list of best places to work? And so I kind of emailed, I went on the website, we call it SOMC, went on their website, sent an email to the recruiting department. They got back to me. We set up a phone call, spoke for about an hour, set up an interview. I flew out here. We hit it off great. And 11 years later, I'm here. So, and I love it here. It's a more rural area of the country. Not only that, it's one of the largest areas in the country for medical issues such as obesity, cirrhosis. We have a ton of something called fatty liver, which can turn into cirrhosis. So obesity, diabetes, smoking. There's a lot of what we call pathology in this area, people that are sick. And so it's a challenging area of the country to work. I remember when I first came out here, I was kind of culture shock. One, from the level of what we call acuity, like the sickness of patients. I joke that my my healthiest patient here would have been my sickest patient back in New Jersey, actually. But it's also different culturally out here than it was in New Jersey. But I love it.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
But I was just curious, like in terms of like your business today, right? So you mentioned that you're in a hospital system, but in a sense, are you also kind of like independent? Like in terms of getting new patients, is that something that they're doing for you? Or do you do like your own marketing? Like, what does that look like for you?
Yeah, I actually do. It's one of kind of my hobbies is marketing. And at the same time, patient outreach. It's interesting. Physicians, you can either, if we take two broad categories, you have your private physicians who, have their own office, pay for their overhead, you know, their staff, make all the decisions. And then you have what we call hospital employed physicians. Incidentally, most of physicians are moving towards the hospital employed position just because, you don't have to pay for the hospital that most places covers your malpractice, covers all the staff salaries, takes care of your equipment, computers, medical record systems, which can be, the medical record system alone can be millions of dollars.
Right.
And so, while I'm employed by the hospital, they do give me a great level of autonomy to, they never tell me how to practice, how to treat patients.
Right.
So, and as far, now they do have marketing, they have a marketing department and they have billboards and commercials and such, but
right.
I took it upon myself to do my own, market myself mostly through social media. So I have a Facebook business account, or, I have my own personal Facebook, but then I have a Facebook business account, which I just strictly use for health, gastrointestinal related information. So I use it as patient outreach. I'll type a condition. I kind of started these little snippets of medical information that start with "Did you know?" question mark, and then I'll put up a condition, say celiac disease or cirrhosis or H. pylori bacteria, and then I'll describe it, put it on there, and then it gets a great response from patients. They appreciate that, and I'm actually spending my money, my own personal money, to advertise on Facebook. Secondly, I actually spent my own money starting my own website.
Right.
Hospital has a website, but I kind of wanted my own control.
But does that help you drive more business to your practice?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you'd be surprised at how many patients will message, they'll see your post on there and they'll either post directly in public and say, where are you located? Or I'll get these messages in my, Facebook Messenger, where are you located? And so then, I got so many of those questions that I set up an automatic reply on set up on Facebook, where it kind of answers the patient's question without you even having to deal with it. But absolutely, I'm so busy. When I first came here 11 years ago, nobody knew who I was really. And so, I had to work hard to build a practice. And now, 5-6 months out before. So the procedures I do, what happens is the patients will come for an office appointment with either myself or I have two nurse practitioners, and they'll be seen, and then we'll schedule a procedure. We usually see them first to figure out their problem and if they need a procedure. But if they end up needing a procedure, we schedule that. And I'm 5-6 months out for those procedures. So I'm literally too busy, basically. We're trying to hire another. We had previous gastroenterologists, but now it's just me and the nurse practitioners and my office staff. And so we're working really hard to hire another gastroenterologist just to handle all our business. And so, that's one thing physicians don't necessarily do too well is marketing, taking control of their social media accounts.
But if you look into, I'm just curious, right? Because now in 2023, there's a big movement to utilize AI in your business. So you mentioned it's like automatic chat response. But if you look into like AI for queries, even like on the hospital website, I know like there's, HIPAA compliance, all these things. Like, have you looked into, to kind of streamline the process of getting questions answered or appointments booked? Do you think that's something that could be relevant for you and for the hospital in general?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, AI is pretty much, I don't say infiltrated, sounds kind of sinister, but almost every field has AI involved in it at this point in time. But yeah, and in fact, the company that I use for my website, they've talked about Do you want to use AI for these automatic responses? When you have patient questions, and we're looking into it. But yeah, I mean, AI, it's perfect for different fields. I think are more receptive to what AI can do for them than other fields. And I think with medical, whether it's automatic appointments or answering questions, certainly there's a potential use for that for sure. And then, interestingly, there's even AI with most of my time I spend doing procedures, endoscopies and colonoscopies. There's actually AI software that helps the practitioner, the physician, identify polyps. And so I don't have it here, but when I go to con, I try to stay up to date on all the latest technology. So I go to national conferences throughout the year. And then one of the last conferences I was at, we saw how it works. And basically, it'll using computer algorithms, it'll identify polyps and it'll put a little red box on it. And so because it's fairly easy to miss small polyps in the colon, there's folds everywhere, and the angles, the light sources. We do our best to find every polyp, but this algorithm helps physicians, and I think it's most useful for training for fellows, that are practicing, who don't know necessarily what they're looking for. That's really neat. So it has even that application. So I mean, just in the field of medicine in general, there's certainly applications where it can be useful.
Do you feel like your job has gotten easier with the help of these high level technologies? Is it, like over the years?
Absolutely. Especially any what we call procedure oriented fields like gastroenterology, where we're doing endoscopies and colonoscopies, and now they're even pushing the boundary between surgery and endoscopy, where they have these special devices on the scope that can kind of dig into the wall of the stomach. It's called POEM, and kind of cut abnormal muscle tissue in the wall of the wall of the stomach or the bottom of the esophagus for certain conditions. As we go along, even since I've been in practice 15 years now, I mean, we've had just the resolution of the images, the lighting, everything's digital. I mean, high definition our monitors. I sometimes joke I almost can see too well during my procedures. Some things that I might not need to see pop up. And then say, what do you do with this little speck there that you're seeing? So, but absolutely, the companies that make the scopes and make the monitors, and there's a camera that you swallow and it takes pictures of a small intestine. It's called a capsule endoscopy. It takes several pictures every second as it travels down, and then you down the small intestine, and then you download it, and you can watch it like a movie. So, without a doubt, I mean, we wouldn't be near, where we are as far as, and it translates into better patient outcomes
For
too.
sure, 100%.
Increasing colon cancer, finding stomach cancer, ulcers, treating bleeding that with different devices, they're always coming up with new
It's neat.
modalities to treat bleeding. So yeah, absolutely. It's helped a great deal for sure.
Would you say is the biggest challenge that you face overall in your business day to day?
The biggest challenge is probably seeing the volume, handling the volume of the patients that we have. And you're allotted certain, say when we schedule our office a day, we'll have however many patients, whether it be 30 in a day, 40 in a day. Some fields can see more patients than others. Some providers can see patients more quickly, but you have a time frame that you're scheduling each patient, usually 15-minute blocks that you're seeing a patient. Then you have something called double booking, where try to take into account cancellations during the day or no-shows during the day. So sometimes you'll double book patients, but so you have a time slot, but then when you go in talk to the patient, you have a human being in front of you that maybe has problems that you can't solve in 15 minutes. And so it's really an art, and it takes a lot of practice to be able to kind of do your best for that patient in the room at that time. But also, you have a waiting room full of people that want to be seen as well. So it's really hard to see all the patients that need to be seen, take the best care of them that you can, help their problems, not have people wait, but still not rush people. So it's really that's just a constant challenge. And
Makes sense.
technology helps that too. We used to use when I first started, we were writing everything down on paper charts. Now everything's electronic. So I go into every patient encounter in the office with a laptop, and I'm typing as I'm talking to them. And patients are used to that now. When we first started that, they kind of felt it was a little impersonal. But fortunately for me, I type pretty quickly, and I can look at them while they're talking as I'm typing, instead of just kind of having my head down, which some doctors do that. But yeah, that's a challenge, professional challenge. And then I always find it challenging from a work, home life, you know, family work balance. I still haven't mastered that because there's an endless amount of work in the hospital, but you have a family at home that you're trying to get time with as well.
What would you say is the one biggest piece of advice that you wish you knew before you started your career?
That's a good question. Something I wish I knew. I guess I would say I wish I knew the best way to manage those two difficult areas, you know, the timing of patients, seeing patients in an efficient manner, and then being able to balance the home, you know, work and home life, because there is a lot of sacrifice, you know. Say 20, 30 years ago, I think most physicians always put work in front of the family life. And nowadays, physicians and providers, whether nurse practitioners or physician assistants, are putting more emphasis and importance on a home, on a family life. Right. And so it can be really difficult to balance those two things. So I wish I knew that it was going to be that difficult. But yeah, I mean, I've been fortunate. When I was training one of the called a residency coordinator, it's basically like the head of the residency program when you're in training in internal medicine. There's Dr. Kattari, and he always said, if you put the patients first, no matter what you do, you know, no matter what decision you make, then you'll always come out on top. You know, you'll always be right putting the patients first. So, and I've adhered to that, you know, all my years in practice, you know, whether colleagues disagree with something you did or administration disagrees with something you do, if you can say to yourself that I did what I thought was best for the patient, then you can't go wrong, really. And, you know, no one can question that.
Makes sense. So if somebody watching this wanted to reach out to you, do you mind sharing your website or social media handle, just best way for somebody to get in contact with you?
Sure. Yeah. My website is www.gastrodoc1.com. So gastrodoc1.com. And then my Facebook business page is facebook.com/gastrodoc1. So it's the same, it's similar. And then those are the two, you know, things. Of course, if you go on my website, on the top, I have all the social media handles that you can just click on and get to everything. If you Google my name, it'll come up, you know, Jesse Houghton, Dr. Jesse Houghton, Houghton. You'll be able to find me pretty easily on there.
Awesome. Well, Dr. Jesse, it was a pleasure. Yes. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Have a great evening.
Thanks. You too. All right. Bye.
Bye.